This is episode 39 of Trash Talking with Eco Warriors featuring Laura Francois of Clothing the Loop.
You're tuning in to Trash Talking with Eco Warriors, where women share inspiring stories about their careers in green business, sustainability, and conservation. Here's your host and founder of Trashy Beauty, Barbara Lee.
Did you see this viral video of an art installation made out of fabric scraps found from an abandoned factory in Southeast Asia? In this video, these renegade artists put together scenes of things you would normally find in nature, like a tornado or a waterfall, out of clothing scraps that had been abandoned over a decade previously. There were several things that caught my attention about this video. One is that they threw out a statistic that I just could not believe. In one person's lifetime, they will go through 2,500 kilograms of clothing. That is 5,500 pounds of clothes in your single lifetime. The second thing was that the clothing found in this factory was made from synthetic fibers and treated with chemicals. As the clothing sat and degraded over the 10 years, it began to break down and release toxic chemicals into the air when it became moved. Laura shared during our episode how she couldn't breathe normally for almost a month after they completed the project. The crazy thing is, if you wear synthetic fibers, this is actually happening while you wear your clothing. Yikes. Once I saw this video, I knew I had to reach out to Laura and hear her story. I think there are three topics that are pretty core to sustainability. One of them is food, and the other is transportation, and last but not least is fashion. This is why we're hosting an evening around sustainable fashion on July 31st at Kickstarter, where we invited designers from New York City who are focused on upcycling, creating less waste, and recycling as much as possible. This event is meant to be fun and informative, but I really wanted to do something that was going to really dive into the issues of why creating more sustainable fashion is globally important. Laura actually does a really fantastic job explaining why fashion is really a human problem. I invite you to hear her story and join us for our sustainable fashion event on July 31st. The link's in the show notes. Let's get trash talking. Welcome to Trash Talking.
Thank you.
If we can just hear a little bit more about you and what it is that you do.
Definitely. I'm a social impact designer. So I work in social impact strategy and working on projects and programs that kind of intersect environmental issues and sustainability with human rights issues in Southeast Asia, particularly. So I'm based in Singapore and I kind of work around the region doing that. I'm also the founder of a project called Clothing the Loop, and that's primarily focused on circular economy in the fashion industry, which is kind of an industry I've been dabbling in for the last 5 years or so. And the reason why I actually moved out here to this part of the world was to focus on the fashion industry and the waste issues that are kind of behind the glamour of the fashion world. So I run that program out of Cambodia, and I also run an NGO called Fashion Revolution. So I'm the country coordinator of that in Singapore and have been doing that in Malaysia as well. And that's an NGO that's in over 100 countries and basically focuses on advocating for sustainability and transparency and ethics in the entire supply chain of the fashion industry. So yeah, those are kind of all the hats that I wear throughout the week, I guess.
That's a lot. So let's kind of like backtrack and then start from the beginning. So where are you from?
I'm from Montreal, Canada.
Okay. And now you live in Singapore.
I live in Singapore now. I guess my trajectory was Canada, New Delhi, India, and then Malaysia and Penang, and now Singapore from, I guess, a couple of years ago.
Wow.
I made that last jump.
Okay. So how did you get from what you were doing in Canada to moving across the world to work on this fashion revolution movement and on sustainable fashion?
Well, I was already, I guess, pretty interested in it when I was still a student and I was living in Canada. And it was always something that I was actually never interested in fashion itself, but I really was interested in what it portrayed, which was this, well, this frivolous and extremely self-indulging thing that we all love to do. And I felt like kind of like a detective. Like I really wanted to like uncover some of the truths that were popping up. And so I went in and I started studying sustainability and human relations, and so the convergence of those two things. Mm-hmm. And the more I worked on it, the more I realized that I really needed to be closer to the source for time zone issues, for language barrier, and just for basic trust of, you know, delving into, you know, large parts of an industry that are trying to be hidden and trying to be definitely kept in the, behind the stage of the fashion show, let's say. So that was one of the main reasons why I took the leap and I just said, okay, I need to be closer to that to actually continue pursuing this quote unquote detective work. I took whatever job I could find. The first one that would take me, I jumped on that. And I moved, and I would work on all of this stuff on the evenings and weekends and any off time that I could, and that was kind of the start of that journey.
Wow. So where did this start for you, though, like your interest in sustainable fashion and wanting to pursue this for, like, your entire life, really, like, change and evolve your life around it? Where did that inspiration to work on this issue come from?
It's funny because I have a really love-hate relationship with that question, because I don't want my world to revolve around fashion, and I don't want this to be the only problem that I want to solve, that I dedicate my life to. But the truth of the matter is, a lot of the problems that I was interested in and wanting to solve ended up falling under the umbrella of quote-unquote fashion and garment industry, which is, issues around water, sanitation, women's issues, a lot of women's equity issues. 80% of people who work in the fashion industry are women. So that was already a big reason why I gravitated towards that. And also the simple fact that it's something that relates to absolutely almost every person on the planet, excluding nudist colonies. Everybody wears clothes. And the truth is, if everybody wears clothes, it's something that everybody is then responsible for.
Sure.
So that kind of became something really interesting to me, because it was a way to talk about women's issues, waste, circular economy, in a way that people could relate to, because all I had to do was tell them to touch that garment that they were wearing on their chest to really get a feel for what it is that I was talking about.
Wow.
So it was a connection point.
Yeah. Huh. That's so interesting. What do you think is your kind of inspiration for wanting to care about nature and work on problems around, like, social justice and sustainability? What sparked that for you?
I'm the type of person that really can flare up in a conversation around equality. And I guess I'm a bit of a staunch feminist in that way. And that, It's funny because I always thought I would be much more involved, on an activist lens or much more focused on human rights. But the truth is, the more I would focus on that, the more I realized that the environment was playing a larger part in that equation. So what I mean by that is, when we talk even about when we talk about water issues, when we talk about access to water in, let's say, South India, there's a direct correlation between access to water and crises and even wars between two groups of people. So when you talk about human rights and environment, they're actually one and the same in my mind. And so the transition between caring about, you know, people's access to the resources was directly related to having to focus on conservation and sustainability.
Yeah.
And I couldn't tear them apart anymore. And so I think I come from that angle, and less of, let's say, the ecologist angle, but we're trying to drive the same thing forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I was actually really shocked by, I'm not a huge consumer, obviously. I'm like, the worst. No, I'm like the worst consumer ever. I've bought my first pair of new sneakers in like 4 years. So
congrats.
I was really shocked by the statistic that you had as part of your Clothing the Loop project, that 2,500 kilograms of clothing is how much you will buy in a lifetime, which in pounds is what, almost 5,000 pounds?
So that's an average. Obviously, this is dependent on where you live and lifestyle habits.
Sure.
That's an average. And Clothing the Loop project was the three installations that were created using that amount of clothing, because we really wanted to represent what one person's, well, what does that even look like? That's a huge number. And if you hate numbers like me and can't even read them properly, I needed a visual. I needed to see what that actually looked like. And that's exactly, I mean, just as I was explaining before, I think the reason why I'm interested in all this in the first place is there's a human face to every single thing that we do. And even a number, like a huge number that represents our waste, that's one person behind it. So it always comes down to the human interaction, the human value. And as soon as it becomes human, it's easier for us to sympathize and to actually act upon it.
Yeah, no, it was really shocking. That's actually how I ended up finding you, was the video that you had online about digging through, was it an old clothing factory? Correct me if I'm wrong. Can you talk a little bit more about like what it was that you're trying to accomplish and how you found this factory of clothing and what was the whole point in pursuing this and kind of talking more about this project?
Yeah, so it actually started off about a year and a half ago. I was giving a TEDx talk, and the guy who was going on right after me or before me was a photographer, and he did really crazy, insane projects using waste and focusing on environmental issues. And his name's Von Wong. And I had never really heard of him. And he seemed like a cool guy. And he came up to me after we both gave our presentations. And he was like, hey, like, you work in fashion and sustainability. I do crazy, crazy, insane projects. If you ever find enough material for us to create a crazy, insane project, let me know. And I really took that proposition to heart. So I spent about a year looking for, I really wanted to create a project that spoke about the waste, but not on the consumer's end, not the waste that we necessarily produce as consumers buying too much clothes and not knowing what to do with it. More about the fact that along the way of producing that clothing, there's a lot that happens that we don't even realize in terms of disposal of clothing that didn't even make it to the shelves, or clothing that was dyed the wrong color and never was sold because the client didn't want it, or all of that stuff. So I came across a factory in Phnom Penh in Cambodia, and it was one of almost 100 factories that had gone bankrupt and closed its doors and had hundreds of thousands of bags of clothing. And this clothing wasn't even fully formed clothing. They had gone bankrupt before they finished creating the clothing. So these are just scraps, like tons of sleeves that were unattached to the sweaters and, you know, half cut pieces. And it had all been left there for about 10 years. And so the issue with that is a lot of our clothing after 10 years, if it's clothing that's made with a lot of toxic chemicals, it starts to degrade and to let off a lot of really awful fumes. So with very little we could do with it. A lot of people have asked me, you know, why didn't you just donate all that stuff? Or how come you didn't just, like, you know, upcycle it and make a whole bunch of, you know, wearable and useful things out of it? But the truth of the matter is, like, a lot of the stuff that we make in the fast fashion industry is really, really terrible for you as a person wearing it and your skin and the absorption of that. And then also for the planet, in about 10 years, that stuff starts to just degrade.
Wait, so you're saying that, like, it would have been like an endangerment to people's health for you to try to figure out a way to turn these scraps into a consumer product?
Possibly, yeah.
Oh yeah. My God.
A lot of there's a big myth around recycling of clothing. A lot of people just think, oh, clothing's recyclable when I don't want it anymore and my used underwear can't be, you know, given secondhand, I'm just going to recycle it. But actually, we can't recycle clothing unless it's 100% one type of fiber. So 100% cotton, 100% polyester. But most of the stuff we buy is mixed. And when it's mixed, you can't recycle it. So that's one thing. The next thing is, if it's been dyed, if it's been treated, if our cool jeans, you know, we could buy jeans with like really crazy, like it's been sort of acid wash or like sparkles or whatever. A lot of times that the process in which those things are made are extremely toxic. And when you're sweating in your jeans and your pores are open, that stuff is going into your skin.
Oh, God.
Not only is that kind of gross, but after, like I was saying, after about 10 years, 20 years, that stuff starts to really degrade, and that goes into the air. I mean, I spent 10 days in that factory, and I kid you not, I couldn't stop coughing for about a month afterwards. Yikes. And it wasn't just because it was full with mice and tons of dust and a whole bunch of other stuff. It was really that fabric, which you start to question, you know, what is it made of? Like, what are we
doing
with that stuff? Yeah.
Yikes. Oh my gosh.
So that's kind of, that was the tip of the iceberg in finding that factory and deciding, okay, we're going to try to, you know, create awareness around this by creating three structures that talk about Mother Nature and that talk about the three main resources that we use in creating our clothes. So that's water, air, and trees. A lot of people don't think about the fact that we cut down a lot of trees to make fibers as well. So we wanted to kind of feature three pieces of Mother Nature within that factory, in that abandoned factory. So that was the whole mission. And it happened unbelievably with team of 100 volunteers who flew in from all over the place, and it was entirely volunteer run, and it was completely haphazard and created with whatever we could find in that factory. So everything that was left over from whoever owned that factory, we were just using and trying to create this monster structure with it.
Wow. And so where is this now based? Like, is it something that's going to be touring around the world, or like, where can people go to see more about this project?
So there's good news and bad news, and the bad news, believe me, I was totally devastated, but the factory itself, as I mentioned, it was closed and kind of totally unattended for about 10 years. And when we left the factory and we had built the structures, we didn't realize that there were holes in the roof. And so after about a month of heavy rainy season in Cambodia, the structures were completely drenched and full of, I don't even want to start naming the creatures that we found living in. Unfortunately, the structures themselves are completely destroyed.
Oh no.
Which was so heartbreaking. And the other thing is, to bring those around on tour, I'm kind of, being someone really focused on impact assessment, The fact is, when you bring something that big on tour, the impact of bringing that somewhere on a boat, on a train, on a plane is really, really intensive. And I wouldn't want to spend that much carbon on just bringing something around to talk about carbon emissions. So it lives online. It is on our website. And there are beautiful photos that Von Long took that will exist forever. But we are actually really keen on creating more of these types of art structures using waste. So we're totally open to collaborations and to kind of see what's possible now that we know that this worked and our video, you know, reached over a million people and really spoke to this idea of like circular economy and fashion. So
yeah. Congrats. I mean, like, that's how I found you guys and your project and you. So obviously,
awesome.
Like, yeah, it's fantastic. This is, and I know that there's no easy answers. And I have friends who are in the fashion industry. And, you know, I have conversations with them a lot about these issues, because we don't have great manufacturing companies in the US. It's not at a competitive price point. It is really difficult, especially for a smaller company that is trying to work on sustainable materials, to get started and get off the ground. So I know that there isn't really a good answer, but what are your suggestions to people other than consuming less clothing and buying less clothing? What are the things that people can actually do in their day-to-day lives to help be part of the solution?
Yeah, that's a great question. And like you said, no easy answer. And the truth is, like, it's not as black and white as I always thought it was.
Yeah.
You know, going back to, like, my personal journey of deciding to come out and live out here and trying to, you know, okay, figuring out what the solution is. That was very optimistic and completely unfounded energy, because, to be honest, I'm starting to realize slowly that it's not actually about, we need to completely, you know, localize the production. Everyone needs to use sustainable fabrics. It can't go 180 degrees, because there are people who rely on the manufacturing and the production of our clothing in developing regions, that if everybody just pulled out and walked away, the devastation that that would create. We're not even sure about the environmental issues that would then come from that type of pulling out of that region. Same thing with cotton farmers. I mean, if everyone started to buy organic cotton, well, guess what? Organic cotton uses just as much water as regular cotton. It uses less pesticide, but just as much water. And so it's not really black and white, and it can't just be like this checklist that consumers walk around with and go, oh, is it organic? Is it locally made? I think that there's some real, decisions that the individual needs to make, including myself. Like, I tell people all the time, I buy from H&M. Big surprise, you know, I'm this, like, staunch environmentalist, and I run Fashion Revolution, and yet, if there's something I really love at a fast fashion company, and I love it more than any other sustainable, ethical brand, I'll buy it, because I know that I will wear that dress much longer and will love it way more than anything else that I've seen.
Right.
And that's the simple truth, is that if we buy things that we absolutely are dedicated to, and we promise ourselves that we're going to take care of that piece, we're going to mend it when it's broken, we're going to make sure we wash it properly. I mean, all those crazy things our mothers used to tell us, you know, that are true. If we stick to those habits, it's not a matter of like, oh, I'm only going to buy X, Y, Z, because it becomes very limiting. And another thing is, I'm seeing this whole trend of sustainability in fashion kind of backfire, in the sense that there's so many people who are now buying just as much as you would at a fast fashion company, but from a sustainable and ethical brand. And that's creating just as much waste.
Mm-hmm.
If you buy a shirt every 2 weeks, it doesn't matter if it's organic cotton or Tencel or recycled polyester, you're still buying a shirt every 2 weeks. And that's fundamentally wasteful. So it's so much more just realizing that either way, there's an impact. Either way, when you buy something, anything, there's an impact. Paper bag versus plastic bag. And trying to figure out which one is better can be really hard and kind of annoying.
Yeah.
But it's all shades of gray, because guess what? The paper bag isn't great either. It's still using trees, right? So to paint something as amazing and good all the time is just as dangerous. So yeah, grain of salt, always grain of salt.
Yeah. I kind of go back. It's so funny how you said that thing about like the dress sparking joy for you, because it's actually like a really silly thing. Like, I'd love to get someone like Marie Kondo on this show, because I think her principles are actually really good principles to follow. It's amazing to have fake leather will almost never break down. So which one is the better resource for us to be partaking in?
Yeah, it's about thinking in systems. And I think when we, which is complicated to do, which is why we don't all do it. But if we did, we wouldn't be in this predicament in the first place, because as soon as we see the system that we're interacting with, so the leather, the faux leather bag, the vegan leather bag, yeah, if you mapped out the life cycle of that leather bag, your choice might be very, very different, because you'd be able to see that trajectory and understand the impact along the way. And it's not just about where did it come from, what's it made, it's where is it going to go, and how's it going to get there? And those questions are just as important. And so, yeah, like going back to H&M, if there's a dress that I love that I know will be able to be recycled because it's 100% cotton, I'm going to go ahead and buy that compared to a dress that I love a little bit less and is 100% bamboo. And at the end of the day, they're both recyclable. And it's a matter of loving the things that you wear to the point of, you know, having that commitment.
Yeah, absolutely. And so where are these resources for creating a circular economy with our fashion pieces? I know that you mentioned that if it's a mixed material, there really aren't a lot of options. I definitely would encourage anyone to like donate it, thrift it, whatever you need to do to make sure it has a second life if you're no longer into it. I don't know, we're talking about doing like a clothing swap at my work, because we have a lot of people in our office who just buy a lot of clothes and don't really need more clothes, but like we just want something that's new to them. You know, we work on things like this, but how do you create a truly circular economy? Like, where do you go to recycle your cotton dress once it's done?
This is a personal stance, but I really think recycling is just not the answer. Like, I think we're really, recycling is just a really easy way for us to just keep consuming. And it's been like a really nice friend to us because it's like, oh, we can just recycle. It's like a nice way to make ourselves feel better about buying more stuff. And that's true of the fashion industry and every other industry. If we go to a coffee shop and opt in for a recyclable cup versus a ceramic cup, we won't feel as bad if it's a recyclable cup and we'll take it anyway. But there's energy that's used in recycling, right? And it's not this magical thing that makes sure that the product that's recycled keeps its value and that inherently keeps its shape, so to speak, and can be reused. So I think in terms of circular economy, it actually stems much more from the design perspective. I think as we move forward, we actually need to think of designers as inherently the most important parts of this equation, because if we design a product that inherently doesn't need to be recycled or is part of a shared economy or can be dismantled and used for different things at the end of life, that design perspective is so much stronger than just the recycling perspective. And so what that means is, like, for the fashion industry, creating pieces that if one part is worn out, you can just take that part away and replace it. Patagonia does an amazing job of this. They're the head honchos of integrating circular approaches to the fashion, to the garment industry. So just the idea that, like, as a company, as a brand, you don't necessarily have to just be selling your products. You could be lending your products. You could be lending parts of your products. You can be selling them, but also acting as a mending and fixing and repairing company. And so that all kind of stems from that design stance and, like, how you want to position yourself. But you mentioned, all those things like thrifting and swapping. And I think we've seen this sharing economy with, like, Uber and Airbnb, and it's permeating all industries, and I think it's coming into the fashion industry more and more, and I think that's amazing, because you're right, when you asked me what are some things that people can do other than not buying as much, well, the truth is not buying as much is, like, the biggest way that you can help this situation out, and so by not buying as much, it's just utilizing what's already made, and so, yeah, it's a sharing economy 100%.
Sure. Also, something that I think gets ignored a lot is this idea of fashion that actually lasts. Like, finding what's your style versus what's in style.
Okay, this is a big, big issue, because, this whole time we've been talking, we've been referring to fashion industry, but I'm totally wrong, and that was my mistake, because I should be talking about the garment industry. Because yes. If you talk about the fashion industry, oh boy.
Yeah.
Then now it's like a whole other conversation about how do we actually start introducing these ideas to an industry that thrives on the fact that things go out of style. This minimalist closet idea came about, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to totally jump on board with this. And because I travel a lot, this is perfect. It so did not stick. The type of person who will wear, like, a floral shirt with a pinstripe pant and, like polka dots. That's my style. So how do I, like, that just did not work with the whole minimalist thing. And
that's
and for a while I felt really guilty. I was thinking, like, this is crazy. Like, I'm advocating for all these things, and yet, like, I can't even do it myself. But then I realized that wasn't the point. Like, if everybody would have such a hard time doing it, it's not going to stick.
No.
Like, us humans like things that are simple and that don't, if it stresses us out, we're not going to keep it around for very long.
Right.
And so that's why even, like, this whole zero waste movement, I can say, like, I tried that out too, and there are parts that stuck and parts that didn't, because, yeah, if it became too stressful, I couldn't keep those hot habits around, right? So it's the same thing in fashion. Like, if you if you love your style, you're not going to, you can try it out for a couple months, but there's no way that it's going to stick with you to go minimal and go completely black and white.
No, I completely hear you. And you're right. It is about like finding what your style is, because it's not that I only wear black and white things. Like, I do have things that are like punctuated with color, but the pieces that I've picked up along the way that I still have are things that like carry a lot of meaning with me. Rebuying the same actually pair of leggings from the same company in the same style because they just work for me.
Yeah, it's so funny you're mentioning this, because before moving here, so when I was in Montreal, I mean, thrifting, well, you're in New York City, so yeah. I guess it's the same thing. Like, there are thrifting options, and you can have a lot of fun with that. And I never felt guilty about that, because it was things that was already, they were already produced, they were out in the open, and if I bought something from a thrift store, wore it for a couple months, and then brought it back, that was kind of my renting
right.
mentality. Here, I mean, I'm like 5'10". I live in Singapore. There's no way that I will find a pair of pants that fit me that belong to a Singaporean. Like, there's just no way. Like, it's just not going to happen. And I've had to come to terms with that. And the truth is, like, the situation in which I'm living it had to kind of infuse my creativity with other problem-solving ideas. And it can't just be, like, yeah, I'm going to go thrift shop this, or I'm going to swap with somebody else, because it just winds up with me having a whole bunch of shirts and no. We haven't figured it out. I think there's a lot of opportunity for companies, businesses, startups, designers to come up with ideas around this, because yeah, this is a huge market. I mean, fashion reaps in a heck of a lot of money yearly, and this is an amazing market to be in, and it's emerging, and there's a lot of things that can be done, redesigned, disrupted, I mean, flipped on its head. So yeah, I this is my call out to everybody who has ideas to please work on them, because some of us need pants.
That's fantastic. Yeah, and you know, it's one of those things too, like, I wish I could sew better, you know, because then I could alter my own clothing myself. And so I think a lot about, like, how do we teach people more about sewing and repairing and how to, like, reinvent your own clothing.
Yeah, there's an amazing artist in Singapore named Aggie Textile Artist, she calls herself. And, like, her mission is just to get people to sew their own stuff.
Yeah.
Try to work on that. And Singapore's a working city. People work crazy hours, similar to New York. It's
yeah.
very fast-paced. And I think that's also the truth, is that most people will not have, they just won't. So how do we design then ways in which we can get things repaired and we can extend the life cycle of the things that we wear, but in a way that doesn't necessarily involve us taking so much time? Because let's be honest, like, I don't think things are going to be slowing down anytime soon. So it's just a matter of, like, how do we jump on the bandwagon and create things that are just as efficient and, I guess, like, work crazy lifestyle friendly, but that can inherently keep, like, those skills alive. There's a company that just started in the U.S. They just launched a Kickstarter. They're called Ripso, and they basically, like, it's like an app where you can, if you have a pair of jeans that are ripped and you want, like, some cool designer to, like, create an awesome patchwork thing around it, you just go on this app and it's kind of like, it matches you with somebody in your area, and you can just bring it to them and they'll, like, work some magic. And
that's
so
fantastic.
I think there's, like, a lot of ways that we can kind of get creative around this, and
yeah.
we don't all necessarily have to be amazing at sewing.
Well, Laura, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for chatting with us about this topic. If people want to find you, where can they look you up?
I mean, you can go on laurafalso.com, send me a message there, or clothingtheloop.org. I'm always happy to chat and see how to collaborate with folks. So this is a group effort. That's another thing I was going to mention, is, like, that's why I'm so happy to chat with you, because, I mean, there are no more borders anymore, and especially when coming to solutions for types of things, issues like this, like, there has to be this type of collaboration. So yeah, always, always happy to chat with anybody who's interested.
Fantastic. Thank you again, and I will make
Thanks
sure to
for having me on the show.
Yeah, and I'll make sure to link everything in the show notes so people can go and find you, and thanks again for tuning in with us.
Yeah, thanks, Barbara. Have a good one.
You too. I really hope that you enjoyed this episode and that you will consider joining us for our sustainable fashion event. There will be some amazing key leaders in this movement around fashion and food and sustainability, and you'll get the chance to meet us and also take a look at some really innovative clothing and enjoy some really tasty, delicious, zero-waste food and drinks as well. Please bring your own cups if you're coming, or straws, whatever you need. We are trying to make this a zero waste event. Also, we will be doing some clothing recycling by TerraCycle. So bring a worn piece of clothing to be recycled by this amazing innovative company. Again, we'll link some more information about this company and all of our partners on our event page. You can find us on Eventbrite and our Facebook page. Get your tickets now. We're planning on selling out. It's going to be an incredible evening with lots of food and beverages and beautiful things and people to look at. So we hope to see you there. And until next time, Eco Warriors, stay green.
Thanks for talking dirty with us. Tune in next week for more Trash Talking with Eco Warriors. For more inspiration, follow us on Instagram @trashybeautyco.